All right, cool. Great. We're back. Amazing. We're back. Welcome back to Evil Thespian Podcast. We are here with Paige Esterly, playwright, producer, and creator of Fucked Up Playfest, New York City's best and only play festival that is also a drinking game. Original plays, original drinking game. Fucked Up Playfest. Paige, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am excited to be here today.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited that you're here. You're in New York, correct? Well,
yes, I am in New York, and I've already prefaced this, but there's construction going on outside. There's also a train right outside my window, so you might get some like nice New York noises. But yes,
we love ambiance.
Yes, the ambiance, cool. The New York City experience.
Yes. And you're from Manhattan originally?
I'm from California originally. Okay, but I moved here for school and like never left and never will leave. So it'll be 10 years this year.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. I stayed through the whole pandemic. I love it here. Like,
I know. That's amazing. Whereabouts in Manhattan? You don't have to say if you don't
want to. I'm kind of like Morningside Heights, mm-hmm. West Harlem. But I've also lived, downtown, I've lived in Ridgewood, Queens, I've lived in Astoria, mm-hmm. but no, I'm a Manhattan girly. All my friends live in like Brooklyn and Queens, but I love it here.
Yeah, it's something about it, definitely. Yeah. Like, it's the energy.
It's the energy, it totally is. Also, I'm right by a bunch of parks. I'm like a block from Riverside Park. And
perfect.
That's huge for me. I'm like a big walker. I like get all my ideas on walks, so...
Yes. Oh my gosh. I have to start walking more. I'm living a very sedentary lifestyle, but I'm in Chicago.
Yeah.
I've lived here basically throughout my whole life. But yeah, I love going to New York because of the same reason. I just like, I love the energy and it just like something about it really. What school did you go to?
I was at NYU. I was a Tisch BFA girly.
Love that. We love, shout out to the BFA girlies. Shout out to the Tisch girlies.
Yeah.
We love Tisch over here. So you went for playwriting or theater?
Yeah, so I was in the Department of Dramatic Writing. So not like, people sometimes mix it up. There's like an actor's studio called Playwrights Horizons where they also work on like mm-hmm. plays and acting in them. I'm not an actor. So I went specifically for dramatic writing. And then within that program, you could focus in screenwriting, TV writing, or playwriting. And I picked play. It's always what I've loved.
Yeah.
That's what I've done.
Wow. How did you... get into plays or just like theater writing in general?
I mean, I have like loved theater since I was a very little kid. My mother and my grandmother would always take me to see shows around, like we would see shows that I'm from the Bay Area. And so we would go see shows at Stanford, like the university shows. I remember seeing a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan growing up. We'd go see shows at other local like high schools and colleges and community theaters, and not like kids theater. I would just go like sit through these like plays and I loved them. And you know, I did a little bit of like, there's always like the third grade play that all the kids in the school have to do, or like kindergarten play where you're Frog and Toad and like whatever. But I did like a theater camp, I think the summer between third and fourth grade. It was The Wizard of Oz. I think I was like a dancing poppy.
I
loved it. I loved it so much. And I also like, I always wanted to be a writer. So eventually they like merged.
What were some of your like, or even now, who are some of your like writing aspirational figures that like have always really inspired you?
I get asked this question. I never know how to answer it because it's not like I don't really have writing role models. I have writers who I like love and I really like their work. A lot of those people actually being like close friends. I think that the new work coming out of people in my community like blows everything else out of the water, personally. But no, like they really emphasized in school, like you should be writing stories that you want to see on stage, and you should be writing things that only you can make. And so I don't actually really I mean, there are things that I take from other writers that I'm like, wow, this person is kind of so experimental in their form, or oh, I love how this person does like direct address to the audience. They pull it off really well, or like, oh, this person's characters are so like dark and funny and they walk that line so perfectly. But I know I really just kind of like write whatever weird stuff comes from my head, and I really try not to think about influences as I'm going to get something down on the page.
I really resonate with that because I was thinking about this today. People always ask, like, oh, what inspires you? What's your inspiration? And asking myself that right now, I'm like, me, I guess.
Yeah, it's
I
just
can
like,
only like I can
yeah.
only make stuff from myself, and it's just exclusively me. And I always find that anytime I've tried to really replicate like an influence of mine, it's like no. It's like I always say, like anytime I enter a new space, sometimes I think like, oh, most people call me Maddie, but when I started college, I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna go by Madeline. I'm an artist, like new me. And it just when, then once you get there, it's like, no, you're Maddie. It's okay. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I definitely resonate with that a lot. But it takes a long time to kind of like, build up and be confident in your own practice too, I think. Was that something like you learned over time in school or maybe post-graduation or through your career?
I think I just never written because I wanted to be somebody, or I wanted to even like put out a thing. It was really like, so I was an only child. I mean, I still am an only child. So I had a lot of time like by myself. And so I would read a lot of books. I would play by myself. I like would play board games and card games like against myself to pass the time, which is like, it's fun. It means you never have to wait for your turn. It's like not sad. Some people are like, that's so sad. No, I loved it.
Yeah, and also it's just like I want to play checkers with myself because nobody can beat me at checkers.
Exactly. Yeah, I would
Nobody's
love
like me.
to play that. But I think I started writing because I just like to sit and imagine things. And so I would find a place that I wanted to live in my brain, and that's what would end up on the page. And so it has kind of always been that way. There was never a time I was like, oh, I want to sit down and like write a story like this person in the style of this person. I mean, I've had to for school assignments. But when it's just me doing what I want to do, no, it has really always been just, this is the story that I am interested in telling, or even more than that, this is the place that I want to live for X months, because you have to like leave this world and like sit in that other world. And if it's not a place you want to be, at least for me, I'm not going to sit down and do the thing. It has to be a place that I'm like really looking forward to vacationing for like 6 months
Yes,
or whatever.
no stress zone, no stress, very, very ease, like
I try to tell myself no
organically.
stress. I mean, it's still always stressful, but
We try as a mantra, well, what's for the listeners that are not familiar, can you give like an overview of what Fucked Up Playfest is?
Oh God, it's the best. So, as you said, it is New York's best and only short play festival and drinking game. And so how it works is I have usually six playwrights a cycle. Sometimes there'll be a team of like two people writing together, in which case we have more playwrights, but we usually end up with six plays per cycle. And I pick five really specific prompts that everyone has to work into their scripts. And those then become like the drinking game prompts. So like, what are some good ones in the past? There has been like something you might do to a Bop-It, a fact about an echidna, a Shakespearean insult. They really like, there's a range. And so each of those six plays has each of those five prompts in it. And so that is your cue. The prompts are in the program. And that is your cue as an audience member to take a drink of your beer, wine, water, what have you.
Oh, okay. So anytime the prompt like comes up in the play, that's when the audience member like takes a drink. I really like this. So do playwrights like usually write plays to reference the prompts more, or is it more like wabi-sabi?
I think it's a mix. I think once in a while there is a prompt that like will really inspire a playwright, and their work will be kind of based around the incorporation of that specific prompt. Of course, they have to then incorporate the other ones too, but it's it's a little bit of a thing where constraints actually like breed creativity. It's not quite the same thing as like the sort of prompt where it's like write a play that takes place on a boat. Like it's not that specific, but it is a little bit of their guidelines, their parameters. And so sometimes that's really helpful. You're not just like staring out at the horizon or into the abyss or what have you. I think for me, because I almost always write a play for these, it's like, I mean, I'm like made
That's
this thing, I
awesome.
produce it. Like I'm gonna like put my work in there. It's fun. It's my little treat. But I think I usually start with just a short play that I want to write, like a premise that I want to write, and then I find a way to work the prompts in there. I usually don't start with a prompt, but that's me personally. And I'm sure if you asked all of the like many playwrights that we've had on the show, they would all have different answers, which is also like there's no like required process.
Yeah, and the prompts like weaves their way like into the piece. I really like that. So, I mean, it is called Fucked Up Playfest. Do people get fucked up? That's
Oh
my
my God, I
question.
get fucked up. And so then I like get on stage at the beginning. I do my little intro. Welcome to Fucked Up Playfest. I'm Paige, I'm your host, et cetera. Here's what it is, et cetera, et cetera. And then, we have three plays. We have an intermission. We have three more plays. And I usually get up at the end to be like, that's our show. Thanks for coming. Follow us on Instagram. Here are other like upcoming shows I'm plugging. And like always by the time we get to that point, I'm a little fucked up. And like, I'm so nervous before I go on at the end, at the beginning. But then by the end, I'm up there, and I like sometimes there have been one or two where I like barely remember what I have said, and then I'll go watch the live stream recording afterwards, and it's usually not as bad as I have feared. But yes, I do personally get fucked up at fucked up play.
Well, it sounds like such a like high like pro social engagement function because there is like drinking and theater and like these are two things that are extremely pro social and it sounds like there's that added layer of audience interaction which is I can only imagine like there's a lot of the audience like interacting with each other a lot do my I wonder do the plays tend to be more comedic? Have you ever had like very serious plays, or
They
what does that look
definitely
like?
screw or definitely skew funny. There have been one or two that have been more like I would even say more experimental than funny. But we have not had like a hyper realistic drama at Fucked Up Playfest. I think a part of that is the prompts are so outlandish. Like, are we gonna work in something that you might do to a boppet into like a really serious play about like generational trauma or what have you? Yeah, so they definitely skew comedic, and that is also my own personal sensibility. I tend to write more in the like kind of comedy vein. But even like there are playwrights who generally write kind of more serious stuff who had then write for Fucked Up Playfest, and I mean most playwrights are somewhere in the middle. But it definitely skews like funny, outlandish, like wacky, like.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. Like anytime I write anything, I can't not see some because theater is so much about irony and seeing multiple sides to multiple different prompts, I guess. I can't not see like some kind of like objective humor in so many different prompts that many plays have, because it's sort of like pointing out like the obvious. And I think like drinking also goes so well along with that because people are always like more likely to just like point out the obvious or like vocalize or really comfortable to like say something that's on everybody's mind. Which is interesting. Do you have like a favorite prompt that you've done
The boppet one is
before?
really good. I love that one. But also, I have found that boppets have made it into a lot of my plays. Just like I think they're a really funny toy. We're actually preparing for Fucked Up Playfest Cycle 10. So like that's very exciting. It's happening in May. And so in honor of like we hit double digits, we hit Cycle 10. Instead of my picking five new prompts, I've asked. I'm have we're we have like five of our like favorite playwrights are coming back for this show, and I sent them a big list of all the prompts they've ever used, and they had to pick each of them picked one prompt from that like master list. And they picked a lot of the ones that are my favorites. Like we have one from the very first ever Cycle of Fucked Up Playfest was every play had to have the line, "But sir, that's not my hand." And I think that that line is
That's
so funny
funny.
because it implies some sort of action. It has a slight narrative implication, like what was this person thinking was this other person's hand? Like, I don't know. But
Who
that
is the
one that really
sir? What's
who's the
not
sir?
the hand?
Exactly.
Yes.
Who's the sir? What's the hand? Like, what's going on? And so one of my playwrights who's I think he's written for so many fucked up playfests, but he picked that one as his prompt for cycle 10, and I was so glad somebody picked that prompt because it was one of my favorites.
Oh, so good. So cycle 10, how long have you been doing this?
Oh, so the very first fucked up playfest ever was I think it was like February 26th of 2020. So like really right before the pandemic, and I remember we were all at the bar afterwards and someone made a joke about like, oh, like COVID, ha ha ha. And
Oh
then
yeah, it's
2 weeks
gonna be
later.
like
Yeah.
this will be
And I was like,
nothing.
ha ha ha, everyone's overreacting, whatever. So I guess the technical answer is 4 years. But we took a long hiatus. So we had one show February 2020, and then we came back August 2022, 2021. What year is it?
It's
It is
2024
2024 now.
now.
Okay, so we must have come back August 2021. So like right after everybody got vaccinated, we kind of thought that things were maybe like really okay.
It
Then they
was
were
kind
like
of like
kind
the
of
in
cut.
between time.
So that's when we picked back up. We moved to our new venue. We're at Caveat on the Lower East Side, which is like a great venue. They're fantastic to work with and they're a great fit for the show. And so that's when we started doing with cycle two, we started at Caveat. That was August 2021. And that's more or less where we've been ever since.
And how do people usually hear about this? Like my favorite thing about going into New York is just like picking some random show and I don't even know what it is going to be and then being pleasantly surprised. Do you have like return audiences? Is it usually just like word of mouth, people coming and going?
Yeah, we have a lot of return audiences. The cast is big because it's six short plays. There's usually kind of like a large team behind it. They'll invite their friends and then invite their friends. But like there are some diehard fucked up playfesters. Like I have like some old coworkers, some friends from high school, people who I don't even really super consistently keep up with in my regular life, but they are at every single one of these shows and they bring like a crew because they think it's so fun. But then there's like this lovely kind of indie theater community network, and people really reliably show up. We all support one another's work. It's really how I met a lot of my collaborators. But then there are also always some like random people who know nobody. And like, I'm always fascinated by how those people find it. And you know, I post in a couple places. We've had like a blurb in the New York Times, and I always like a post on like the Skint and kind of other event like websites. Caveat own following of people who like to see shows there. And so it's really like a mix of folks.
That's a shout out to the people who don't know anybody and just show up. Like those are
Yeah,
the
and like
best.
oftentimes those are the people who like play along the most, because I'll be sitting there and I'll be like kind of in the corner like looking at the audience. And I think it was for the very first or second time we did it at Caveat, there was this whole section that was just like frat boys, like finance frat boys, who were definitely like
Amazing.
not attached to anybody involved. And they were so into it. I was watching them and like a prompt would go up and they'd all be like, hey, and they would drink and they were so into it. And I think
I
that's
love
really
that.
cool. Like, I love the idea of bringing theater to people who like would otherwise not necessarily pick theater. I think the like the drinking game thing is a little gimmicky.
I mean,
Truly is.
it's a conduit. It
And people are
is
gonna be like,
really 'cause
oh, like I like drinking. Like, because there's such a drinking culture. And that's also like, it's a tricky thing. I'm not even really a big drinker in most of my life. But it really does get people into the door, people who are not normally theater people who are looking for like a good time, like a party, And we do the show at 9:30 on a weekend night on the Lower East Side. And so it's very
Yeah.
much, I'm trying to capture the vibe of like, okay, you could go see live music, you could go to a bar, or you could go do this.
Yeah.
And so I do think that that is helpful to kind of get people into the door who would otherwise not want to go see a theater show. And then they really enjoy it. They're into it, and that's
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There are a lot of shows out there where, I mean, usually when you go to an indie show, like somebody like has like a makeshift bar, and then you make your way and seat yourself, and then I find myself, my wine is like sloshing all in the darkness, and I really like this setup of just like the fact, my two favorite things, drinking and games. And it's really hard to get like audiences very like extremely engaged in indie theater like that. Because sometimes it is like very experimental or very, awkward, or you don't really, just kind of like digesting a lot for the first time, especially for those new audience members. And this is really interesting because, yeah, like you said, it does bring out the best kind of audiences that maybe like don't have that background, like in theater, or just like super like coming in cold. Those are I always bring like my parents or my family members to like some of these events, because that's always like, those are the people, like you said, like have the most fun. And that's like very satisfying to see. So you're the producer and creator. How did you get this idea?
I gotta tell you, I was shocked that nobody had ever like done this before. Like kind of like I said, I'm like not a big drinker most of the time, but I do think that drinking games are fun because they help you, I don't know, like engage with media in a different way. Like I don't love the movie Twilight. Like I don't care. But there are a lot of really funny Twilight drinking games, and I think
There
that's what made me
are.
think about it. And so it's that, and there's also kind of like the like bake-off aspect where it's like, okay, you write a play that you that includes these certain things as a way to like spur creativity. There's a show that actually I was running in New York for like maybe a decade, like a really long time, called 7x7. And that show had similar in that there were certain like rules that every play had to follow that were picked by the playwrights. And so it exists in kind of like a similar world to that, I guess. But these rules are a little bit more like literal. You have to include like this line, this thing. And they're also meant to really inspire the audience engagement. And like, I had done some producing. I had produced some full-length works, and I was kind of like, didn't really have a new play coming down the line, and I wanted something to do. And so I was really thinking about ways to inspire like connection and collaboration between writers and directors and actors, but also audience, like how to bring them into that equation. And so this is what we landed on. And the first one was such a hit. The first one was like a little bit of a mess, but people loved
I
it.
was gonna
So.
ask, like, have you ha ever had a fest that has gone not necessarily awry, but have there been any messes?
Not huge messes. I mean, I think the first one was a mess because I was not as I was like, oh, it's fine if you are like still on book. It's fine if you don't like it was a little bit more staged reading-y. Sometimes and then some of them are really, really polished. And so that discrepancy was a little bit wacky.
You're just figuring out like, what is this thing that I'm doing?
Like,
Okay,
what
that's
does it
gonna let
want to be? What can it be? And so then, really, by the time I got to like, I think the third iteration, I was like, okay, everybody has to be like off book. You have to have at least like 4 hours of in-person rehearsal time. Like, okay, go. And the plays have gotten a lot more kind of like polished since then.
Yeah, I was just thinking about some of my favorite drinking games. When I was in theater school and college, we would have, I totally forget what the like activity really was, but we would have this drinking game called Oliver Twist, and we had those like styrofoam like Dixie bowls that you get from Walmart, and we would fill it with champagne for some
Oh, you're
reason.
classy. Okay.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where you had to walk around and carry it throughout the whole party, and then anytime somebody said something or you were like prompted to do so, everybody would have to like say at the same time, "Please, sir, may I have some more?" and drink it out of the, just so like the craziest stuff. But I mean, I love drinking games for that reason, because there's always an element of just like wacky, wild debaucherousness. Yeah. It puts you in a position where like, why am I doing this? And why is it very entertaining and fun for me? Do you have like a favorite drinking game at all? I'm wondering.
Actually, like, I'm just not a huge drinker. Bucks of Playbits is my favorite drinking game. I mean, the other thing is NYU, like, as an NYU kid, we didn't really have parties. Like, I don't think I ever played beer pong until like I had graduated and like,
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Whoa. So I think like my favorite drinking games really are the ones that go with like movies or TV shows. The ones, yeah, where like when this happens, when this character like does this, take a drink. Like,
yeah,
those are truly my favorite.
I've heard about the Twilight one. I forget what is like the part where you're supposed to drink, but I've heard about like many different Twilight drinking games.
Yeah,
actually,
I think there are also a lot of like Bachelor universe drinking games. I also don't watch The Bachelor or Love Is Blind.
Me neither.
Like, yeah, anything that is kind of like mainstream media and also kind of predictable, like it, mm-hmm, it works.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. That's interesting that you said. I've actually never heard, or maybe I haven't asked about like, you know, the drinking culture at like NYU or anything, because my theater school, I went to like a small state school in the middle of Virginia, just very, very small school. My class was like a class of 100 theater majors. And it was one of those like old fashioned college towns where there's nothing to do but just get really fucked up. And it's interesting, because like the theater kids and like our community were very seen as like stoners, big time partiers, and that was just like, well, so when I like hear people saying like, oh, you know, I went to so and so and we didn't, I'm like, I can't even believe it. Like, wow.
And there definitely
crazy.
Were people at NYU who were like big drinkers. I mean, like, they're like, for when sure. You are 18 and have no money and you're a cute girl, like you can get into a club for free. And so mm-hmm. there were those nights where like we would go out and just get like look hot and get alcohol, which was like also questionable, and like there's a whole consent thing, and it was dicey. but there definitely were people who were big drinkers. I just like have never been a big drinker. I don't like to like get messy or
I'll throw myself under the bus. I'll be 30 this July, and man, it is really hard. I'm hanging in there, but yeah, it is like very, very painful, because I really love my family, or like we're huge partiers over here, and I just don't know. And it's interesting, because I often see people who are older, like over 40 sometimes. I think something happens, you get another like spike of energy or something, but I don't know. This age that I'm at, I'm just like very tired. So hopefully when I'm like 40 or 50 years old, only because like my parents and like my grandparents, they could just like go and like drink all night. I'm like, I don't know how. So
for me, another part of it is like, the drinking is never the goal. It's kind of the like the hanging out that's always the goal.
Exactly.
So that's like, I think that also ties into Fucked Up Playfest. I like didn't actually make this like event for people to get belligerent. Like, I don't want people to get belligerent.
Yeah.
To, like, get a little tipsy and really enjoy mm-hmm. the theater and talk to one another mm-hmm. and like talk to the actors and come out mm-hmm. with us to the bar afterwards and like really kind of connect. And like, it doesn't matter if you're drinking like beer, wine, mm-hmm. caveat where we perform, they're really close to a synagogue, so they don't have any like hard liquor.
Okay.
So it's really just like beer, wine, whatnot.
Yeah.
But like water, tea, ginger ale, like whatever. I want you to just be interacting with the work and mm-hmm. one another and the community. And that's really like the dream, the goal.
Yes. What, the people that come in and like do the plays, do you mostly get people who have a theater background or are just coming from a writing background? What's usually like the demographic?
Yeah, I really try to keep it with people for people with a theater background. Once in a while, there'll be somebody who is more of like a stand-up background, like a comedy background. And also once in a while, there are people who like kind of skew more like fiction poetry, I guess. But really pretty much it is like playwrights, people who identify like, I am a playwright. This is what I do. I'm going to write a play for this.
Wow. Do you have any specific like plays that you like can't forget about? Are there any specific, I'm wondering, like maybe some of the best works can come out of this.
My friend Enzo, who is, I met him in undergrad, and he's, I think, written for more Fucked Up Playfest than anybody else, but he gets kind of creative with the form, and he often will do kind of like the format of a like infomercial or like a corporate presentation. And there was one that was, God, how to like make billions with Jackson dollars, how to win big with Jackson dollars. But it was like a like spoof on like a kind of get rich quick, like motivational speakers.
Yeah.
And it was so fucking funny. And there was this, like, one of the prompts for that cycle was a character who flosses, and it could be like the act of like flossing or like dancing, like, you know, like the floss that was in whenever that was. And so in that, like, has a little bit in that show, and he also always acts in them too. He's very multi-talented, but like a character was like flossing their teeth, and there was a little bit of like stage magic where as they flossed, like dollars came out and like flew across the stage.
I love it. So the practicals. Awesome.
Yeah. And that was one that like we all still talk about because it was so good. Yeah. That was an awesome one. There's another one that really stands out in my memory is my good friend Meg Rosensweet wrote this play called Lady Dick's Barbecue Sauce. And it was kind of a commentary on like trans identity and consumerism. And like, there was like, it was a messy one. We had a stage
got messy.
But that was another like true standout. There are so many standouts. I think those are the first two that like popped into my little brain.
Well, there are some that I think
have multiple like iterations. There's like a part one and a part two in a later cycle.
Oh, a whole universe.
Like recurring characters and storylines. That's cool. Yeah.
I was gonna say, like, I think you mentioned like the constraints. Whenever there's constraint on something, like that really is where like the creativity happens. And I think like this sort of like concept of like, it does make you think like how many more constraints, because it's sort of like a game of like how many more like limitations or like little tiny like pieces of constraints can I put inside a prompt, or like you said, like have very, very like specific, like weird, like prompts like that are like themselves just like this huge foundation for like some kind of amazing play. And I always like those plays that are very like non-linear, like non-narrative based. Like you said, like the infomercial is like such a good idea. Have you like seen like a lot of like collaborations come out of this? Are people,
I mean,
like,
I met all of my like best friends and favorite collaborators by doing this show. Like it was a couple I don't remember which cycle it was, maybe the second or third cycle, but like these actually they're it's Michael and Nick, who you just interviewed for Serial, but they were both
yes
at this show.
Shout out Michael, Nick.
Yeah, and Michael was even in it, and they like came up to me after the show and were like, hey, you're awesome, that's like connect. I kind of like, there are always people coming up to me after the show, and like it's the people I kind of like forget half of them, and like if somebody who is like listening / watching and coaching after a show and I don't remember you, like I'm so sorry. But they came up to me, and I kind of like, I was like, oh, that's cool, like they seem cool. And then a couple of months later, Michael asked me if I wanted to come write or direct for Serials, and I was like, yeah, sure. And I have like through that connection have met like so many like wonderful collaborators and friends, and like all the
That
people.
has happened to me so many times. Sometimes I'll be at a show. I had this one interaction where I felt so bad, but it was one of those situations where I had possibly interacted with this person online, but then I was like passing through a hallway and these two guys came up to me like, "Hi, Maddie." Like it, and it was like the energy of like, "Oh, seeing you again,
Like, we
like
know each
it's been a
other.
long
We can
time
be
no see."
friends.
And I was just like deer in the headlights. I was like, "Oh, okay." And like awkwardly floated away. And like that has
Definitely.
happened to so many times, but I always say shout out to you guys.
Yeah. And like,
Shout out.
I have really bad facial recognition. I just like, unless you have like really memorable, like hair is really what does it. I do not remember you. And like during deeper pandemic times, when everyone was masked all the time, that was a whole other layer of like business part, but also kind of an excuse of like,
Yeah,
people
that's
like, wear a
true.
mask, I don't know who you are. But it happens to me all the time. And like, I will often try to be like, oh, like, what have you been up to lately? Hoping that they will drop, like, oh, my spouse, my job, or like something that will like ding a bell. Sometimes people will just be like, oh, like same old, which is the worst possible answer. Like,
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, I have to think of some like, oh yeah, let's where do we leave off again?
yeah, that's a good one. I'm gonna take that
Yeah.
one. Yep.
Or maybe like sometimes I will like go all like really, really laid on thick and be like, "Oh my gosh, I totally forgot. Where like, oh my gosh, what were we talking about?" Or like, "When did I last see you?"
Yeah.
It's
Yeah. When did
been
I last see you is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, when did I last see you? Or something, actually, I learned this in theater school in my audition class. Like, if you're ever in a situation where you feel like kind of put on the spot, it's, I mean, for the class, it was like audition. But one of the best thing, and this has really helped me in like podcasting as well, a great like conversation starter, icebreaker, what have you, is to just say a single statement. Like, "Oh, that is a picture on your wall," or that, yeah, or "That is a picture frame right behind you," or "You're wearing a gray sweater." And usually, and I've done this in interviews as well, where people will be like, "Oh, yeah, I am wearing a gray sweater. It's from Gap. I love the Gap. I was just there the other day." Oh my gosh. And that's how kind of how it's supposed to go.
That's good.
Doesn't always work that way, but every once in a while it's just like the perfect way to just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, but I want to cut into a conversation or figure something out. I will just like say a statement like, "Those are great. Those are shoes that you're wearing, and you're
Yeah.
wearing those
Yep.
shoes," and something will cu like cut like come out of that
Yeah.
usually. But yeah, I mean, especially when like people are coming and going so often, and in Manhattan too, like when you live in like a cosmopolitan city, it's really hard because people do like move in and out of the city so much. I've always had that issue like living in Chicago. The comedy scene is like, or I don't know, it was very more vibrant, I feel, before COVID. But a lot of people left after COVID, and then people are always coming in. Do you ever feel that way about like living in Manhattan for now 10 years? Just like kind of this feeling of like people are coming and going, where they go,
Yeah,
who, like,
definitely.
where are the new people? Yeah.
And like, so between the first cycle of Fucked Up Playfest in February 2020 and the second cycle in August 2021, we've established pretty much everybody. I collaborate, not everybody, but like a hefty majority of people I collaborated with on the first one left during the pandemic. They moved home. A lot of people moved to LA. I have a ton of friends who moved to LA.
What all of the LA people like, okay, they were here in 2019, 2020, yeah, towards 2019, 2020, there was like a huge swath of like Chicago people that like went to LA. I was like, one day I was in like an improv class with somebody. The next couple weeks they were like writing on some Hulu show, and I was like, how did this happen so fast?
Definitely. And now it's like my big, like I have all these people I love, love, love working with. And I'm like, you can't, none of you can move. Like I have a good friend, someone who I love, who has like acted in my work before, who just like applied to a bunch of grad schools. And like, I'm like, yeah, like you should get into all of these because you're so talented, but also like, oh man, if you like get into Yale and move to like New Haven,
Yeah, wherever Yale
thoughts.
is. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I get it as well because sometimes it is hard to like be in a like very like competitive like city, I suppose, and then feel like some kind of way after like 4 or 5 years. Michael and Nick, I yesterday were just talking about how in this space or in your career, there's a lot of waiting, and that's kind of one of the hardest parts about that waiting feeling that like propels you to think about like what should I do, who should I be, where should I go. But at least for me, I found like just like doing the building of something and being very like patient with it and watching it grow its own legs has been like a really great answer to that, especially when like so many people are like attracted to it and like you're really seeing the output of that, I guess.
Yeah, like I feel like I could not leave. And not just because I love New York and I love New York so much and like why would I live anywhere else? But also because I have such a foundation and a community here. And I think there is an argument for like going to do theater elsewhere where it's cheaper. I think that's one. It's really, really hard to make work here, but it's kind of hard to make work everywhere.
Anywhere.
It's
Yeah, that's what
out there.
I always
It's
feel
okay.
like, oh, I'm gonna move. Like DC is like a really popular theater town. I know a lot of actors who are like working in DC. But you wouldn't think it's like one of the most expensive places to live. Now I'm just like, oh yeah, literally is very difficult. So you're gonna have some of the same relative like game of Tetris that you have to do wherever you're making theater. New York is like so great because I've just found like there's a just this openness and it's very it's very like just so many people are just like coming and going, I guess. Like, and it's very like normal to just like talk to somebody about something. It's very like low stress, I feel like. Low stress as much as it can be.
I mean, yeah, like is New York low stress? Like, I don't know. New York's the worst
I
if you've ever said that. But no, I do think that the community here is like really, really lovely and really, really supportive. And because we are all facing the same constraints and like independent theater is so bleak for all of us, it's really like, even though there are so many people and so few opportunities, to me, it doesn't feel competitive at all. I don't feel competitive with my community. I feel like a win for one person is a win for all of us. And
Yeah,
I think that's really
exactly.
shared throughout the community here.
What was one of the like mo like when you're just starting out, especially since COVID hit right after you like sort of launched this, what was kind of like one of the most difficult things that you found sort of like surprised you or challenged you as you're like slowly building out the community?
I mean, I've been fucked up. Playfest is so like other places are gonna hit like hate this because I see how hard they work. It kind of runs itself, and I think part of that is
That's
because
awesome.
I am generally not a great delegator. I'm like a little bit of a control freak a lot of the time. But because I work with playwrights who I really trust, I'm able to really give them a lot of the responsibility. And so, in terms of like the time and the difficulty, it hasn't been like horrible. And of course, there have been the times where writers have to drop out last minute. I have to find a replacement, and that's
Yeah, for sure.
after COVID, and I have to find a replacement, and that's just for like I tell people please have minimal tech cues, and someone shows up with eight tech cues. And so there are those moments. But like generally, because I produce I do a lot of full-length producing, and so Fucked Up Playfest is, I mean, it's not my side hustle. I mean, it's my side hustle, and I like work two jobs to like live. Compared to producing a full-length show, Fucked Up Playfest really runs itself. It is like the child I don't have to worry about that like does its thing. It's great. And so it
That's
allows
nice.
me to like really kind of do the stressing about the like more involved full length.
it's nice when like you kind of realize that you can sort of walk away at some points and realize that it's something that does kind of like, I feel that way very much about this podcast sometimes. Like, I also over obsess about every single little detail and you know, gap of dead air and filler word, but then I think like it literally runs itself because people are on it, and like the, you know, it's like the community that like really actually makes it, not me. So like I'm sort of in the driver's seat, but at some point not really. Like it's just growing and like its own legs and being its own thing, which is, yeah, a great feeling to have. It's sort of like a relief a bit.
Yeah, it's really a relief. And like I still have my to-do list. I still stress out about them. I'm still like, oh man, like I need to post that thing on Instagram that I've been meaning to post for 3 weeks. I like am terrible at the social media aspect of all of this.
It is really hard. It is hard.
It's like I hate trying to fucked up Playfest Instagram.
No, it's really funny because I mean, I've been doing this podcast for like 2.5 years, but I only in the last year have been starting to post and interacting more often. And it is a lot harder than most people think because I'll post something and I'll be like, great, I did my job. I posted the thing. And then like 5 days go by and I'm like, oh, I guess I should post again.
Like, it's happening. You know? Like, it's like,
I know,
having to do it, like you did it, you're done. But like, then you have to do it again. And it's also not, I think the thing about social media that gets me is it does not like directly contribute to the art making. Like a lot of produce, like
right.
I send emails to the cows come home because those emails are necessary to get the final product. Like Bucktopus didn't have an Instagram until I started it maybe like 2 years ago, a year ago. Like it is, the Fuck to Playfest Instagram is relatively recent.
Yeah.
And so I'm always reluctant to put time into like posting. Like I am not.
It's hard.
Like not.
I'm trying to get one of those. Like, okay, what kind of phone is it?
It's a Nokia. I can't tell you what like, model. It's red. Yeah.
I'm in the market. I am. I'm on like that.
Yes.
Cause I'm like on sort of, I'm like the, on the same page where it's like, I'm on that two phone kind of lifestyle almost because it is really hard to do social media because it doesn't necessarily like contribute to the actual art making itself. Yeah. There's always like, it puts a lot of pressure on the person who's posting because like there's such an action item. And like when I mean, I still like relatively like work in tech as a like freelancer. But once I started learning more about like how to algorithmically grow organically an account, it's insane. Like people who do it like really quickly, I'm just, it's like you, there's all these like math equations you can do. It's like one, same thing with like TikTok where I'm like, I could never even go, like I try do whatever, it's whatever, it's a lost
I'm
cause.
Not on TikTok. I like
no
on Instagram.
No, yeah, but
no, any additional views, like I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just like, hopefully it does. Or I check my link tree sometimes and just cross my fingers. But yeah, it's a link based economy, which sounds like so lame and rant, and I'm like, this is something. But yeah, it is really difficult to like make stuff that is like sort of like the extra like residual that is like sort of supposed to be there. But I always something that I really like love about this community is that a lot of people meet on Instagram.
Like I find writers on Instagram, I find actors on Instagram, like people, I connect with people on Instagram. And so for me, it's maybe not even necessarily about like advertising the show, it's about like having a platform for people who are interested in the show already to like connect with me, I guess.
Yes. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like visual diary of like I have all these show photos. My really good friend is a photographer and gives us like fantastic deals on our, like, just all of our graphic design, all of our photography. Shout out to Madison Sheff, she's like the
shout
best
out. Yes,
but
yeah, no, it is nice to have that though. Yeah. So, like I always look back in my, because I think I'm like, oh, the my cloud is almost at capacity with like all the photos and videos and everything. And sometimes I think I need to print these out and put them in an album or on my wall.
I have a physical album. Like, I fit
Yeah,
my
absolutely.
phone. I'm also gonna like take film photos and put them in a photo album. And I
Oh,
don't,
yeah.
it's so expensive to get film.
Yes.
So
It
I
is.
pictures and like that's.
Yeah. But until then, I'm like, I could just easily, I post it on Instagram, it's there, and then usually I like forget that it's there, and then I'll like go back every once in a while, and it's kind of like its own way of like being an archivist. A lot of
Yeah,
people say that now, but it's like true.
I totally agree. I can go back and look at old things, and that's really nice. That is nice about it.
Yeah. And
Definitely.
I always forget that I'm tagged and stuff, and I always forget like there is like that tagged bar, and anytime I like click on it, I'm like, oh my God, I forgot somebody tagged me in this, or like I'm still tagged in this, which is like really, really funny. When's your next? You said you have a show in May.
Yeah, so May 3rd
Yes.
at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, New York time. So yeah, we also have a live stream option, and the live stream at Caveat is so good. Like
I love that.
everyone is always like, it has no right to this. It's like multicam. It ends up looking like a live recording of a multicam sitcom. It's like so good. Their equipment and their
I
live
love that.
so good. And then we get to keep the archived footage also.
Wow.
Yeah, like if there's anybody listening who is not based in New York, if you are based in New York, come check it out. May 3rd, 9:30 p.m. at Caveat. The ticket link is live. But if you are not based in New York, live stream it from anywhere. I think you ha it's like live stream or on demand. So I think you have like 30 days after the date to watch it before it disappears, I believe. But it's like, yeah, like
Wow.
not like a shitty single cam, you can't hear the audio live stream. It is like
Yeah.
really, really good.
That is such a good idea because I'm just like learning about this concept of like live streaming like a show, I guess now, because I never thought of it as something that could like be like that multicam experience or like very like high like so now you have like a very wide throw, you know, like why not cast the net as like far as possible?
Yeah, like parents watch, friends watch. It's yeah, a nice way to kind of like, and it, I mean, I think it really started heavily during when it was like 2021 and people were vaccinated, but like people were still dicier about going outside.
Yeah.
And like, not to say the pandemic is over, the pandemic is not over, and it is like horrifying how blase they've
For
gotten.
sure. For
Like,
sure.
as long as you have a fever, like that's horrifying. I hate
Yeah. I think I got like sick. I don't know if who knows if it was COVID or not, but I never get sick. And I swear this like last fall, I got sick like two or three times. I don't know what that was about. Very suspicious.
But yeah, I think that the live stream thing really came about then, and Caveat just really nails it. Not all live streams are created equal, and Caveat, it's like all Caveat, but they nail it. Live stream.
Amazing. Cool. So let's plug away. Where can we find, I mean, Fucked Up Play Fest, first and
Yeah.
foremost. on Instagram at
Yeah.
fucked up.
So
Yeah,
at Fucked Up Play
what
Fest,
is
but without the U because Instagram gets like weird about swears. So it's, I guess, FCKEDUP. Fucked up
Link
play.
in
I
bio.
think it's like you can look it up. I have my flip phone. Like I think it's Fucked Up Play Fest without the U. And my
Yes.
Instagram is Pouty Writer, because that's how I feel when I write.
Perfect.
And then in terms of other, like, do you want like upcoming show stuff?
Upcoming shows and anything you have even outside Fucked Up Play Fest, if you have anything going on producing, writing.
Yeah, so definitely check out Fucked Up Play Fest Cycle 10 on May 3rd, 9:30 p.m. at Caveat. Super exciting, great lineup. We just announced it. Watch the Instagram for like the real announcement. I'm still getting through the like photos from January because I'm bad at social media, as you've already established. You can also find my work on New Play Exchange. I have it's pretty up to date. I have like fresh drafts of some shows. Super upcoming is I'm actually directing for Serials this coming week. So
Love
Serials, if
that.
you didn't listen to the last episode of Evil Thespian podcast, is five short plays, and the audience votes on their favorite, and the top three with the most votes come back the next week with a brand new episode, like in the story arc. And so I've written and directed for them. I am directing this week. Those shows are Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 9:30 at the Tank. I don't know when this is going to come up, so this might like be
Well,
after the fact now.
we're reminiscing on good time. No, yeah, I mean, like I
If you weren't
said,
there, you missed out.
yeah, it was a great time, everybody.
Great time. Like I'm seeing you in the
Amazing.
future, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then I have kind of an ongoing project called The Great Lesbian Love of Eve Adams, which is a show
Ooh.
I have been working on since, I think also since 2021, really kind of similar time frame, but it's the true story of Eve Adams, who was a Jewish lesbian immigrant who opened up like a lesbian speakeasy in New York City during Prohibition, and she published this book, Lesbian Love, that was kind of like the first depiction of lesbian life, the first written depiction of lesbian life
Wow.
like ever. So like really big deal, kind of unknown person. And so we've had two kind of workshop productions of that, and we're kind of gearing up for a little bit more, like maybe a 3 week run and like a little bigger house.
Yeah.
But that's been really cool, and we've been collaborating with some other folks who are involved in like the research of Eve's life, and we've been talking to some of our like family members, and like that's been really, really cool. And so that's kind of like the big project
Wow, that's,
over
you
the
know,
coming
that's so important too, because there's such a discourse out there about like the loss or like how bereft of lesbian bars and spaces there are. It's like been such a to hot topic of conversation for like 10 years now, because it's like there used to be like lesbian bars, like there used to be more, like it was like a popular thing integrated into like the extended like LGBTQ like community, you know, social like environments and all that. And yeah, you just, it's such a very important topic. Like, no one talks about it.
Yeah, and I think also, she publishes a book, and it was she was arrested for the publishing of an indecent book. And I think that also
Yeah.
we see so much like horrible like book banning and like queerphobia and transphobia across the country going on right now. And like schools banning all these books. And I think it's really, really relevant. This was 100 years ago, and it's like same shit, different country.
Just
Like
looks
different millennia.
different. Yeah. Wow. That is such a good idea. So you would be like gearing up for like just like a kind of like a workshop like run or like a full
We would
run.
want to do like a
Yeah.
little bit of like we did a show at this space at Irondale in Brooklyn in 2022, and then in 2023 we did a 2 week run at the Tank that sold out, which was fantastic. And so
Wow.
next step is going to be like bigger theater, longer run, try to like really like shoot our shot, get people in to see it. Like
Yeah. Wow. Have you gotten any like feedback yet? Or I know sometimes when you're in it, it's hard to like talk to people like how did you like it
I
or
mean,
things
people, we
like that.
got great feedback. And the feedback that was kind of, I mean, obviously my friends and like my parents are gonna be like, oh my God, like you're so talented. But we got a lot of great feedback from strangers, from like especially strangers who were in like the queer community in New York City. That was incredible. The community who came out for it and the way people responded to it. There were some like money people, some like producery people who came and liked it. And so that's we love that.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't want to like
Yes, absolutely.
have money coming down at us
Yes.
project, but we like potentially have money coming down at us for this project from this for people who really enjoyed like theater
I
producers who really
love that.
enjoyed this show. And so that's been like really
Super
exciting.
exciting. The possibilities are limitless. That's amazing. Well, great. Well, Paige, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been so lovely. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to chat. And yeah, everyone go see Fucked Up Playfest.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me, and
Yes.
for doing this cool podcast. It was a pleasure to chat.
Yay, thank you so much, and scene.